Law 40. Despise the free lunch. What is offered for free is dangerous. It usually involves either a trick or hidden obligation. What has worth is worth paying for. By paying your own way, you stay clear of gratitude, guilt, and deceit. It is also often wise to pay the full price. There is no cutting corners with excellence. Be lavish with your money and keep it circulating, for generosity is a sign and a magnet for power. Money and power. In the realm of power, everything must be judged by its cost, and everything has a price. What is offered for free or at bargain rates often comes with a psychological price tag, complicated feelings of obligation, compromises with quality, the insecurity those compromises bring, and on and on. Powerful learn early to protect their most valuable resources, independence, and room to maneuver. By paying the full price, they keep themselves free of dangerous entanglements and worries. There is a lot to be said that paying full price for something increases the intrinsic value you get from it. In all my experiences and in everything I've heard as well, like Tim Ferriss harps on this as well, when people pay more for something, they value it more. But not only that, if you are providing a service, they take this service a lot more seriously. They value it more in hand. And your highest paying customers are often your most loyal. They often complain the least, they request the least, they have the least headache. Whereas your lowest paying customers, the ones who are just trying to get this, the bottom of the barrel, the lowest possible item, trying to bargain, are often complain the most, they demand the most, and they question the most. And they end up in turn taking up your most valuable asset, time and energy. People work hard for their money. If they're going to pay a high price for something, they're going to expect excellence, and in turn you will deliver excellence. But because they've paid such a high price for your good or service, they will really try to take full advantage of it. I think in those cases that we will appreciate even the littler things that we wouldn't have noticed in a specific thing we've paid for because we've paid a higher price, because we were looking deeper than the superficial to find meaning and value that we didn't ordinarily see. But this is just my perspective from my experience, from things I've heard. I cannot sum this up as eloquently as a guy like Tim Ferriss did or any other influencers have. But if I recall correctly, I believe Tony Robbins charges around the sum of $1 million for a one-on-one consultation type of mentorship help. Now, one, he does this because he can, because he's earned the right to, and two, because charging $1 million, almost 99% of the time, he wants to guarantee success. I'm paraphrasing him, but by charging $1 million, he guarantees adherence in the changes that he prescribes of the other person. They're not going to mess around with paying $1 million and not do what he says or suggests. They're all in at $1 million. Success is pretty much guaranteed at that point. So really, they're buying into themselves as much as they're buying into him with that sum. The powerful understand that money is psychologically charged, and it is also the vessel of politeness and sociability. They make the human side of money a weapon in their armory. A miser, to make sure of his property, sold all that he had and converted it into a great lump of gold, which he had hidden a hole in the ground, and went continually to visit and inspect it. This roused the curiosity of one of his workmen, who, suspecting that there was treasure when his master's back was turned, went to the spot and stole it away. When the miser returned and found the place empty, he wept and tore his hair. But a neighbor who saw him in this extravagant grief and learned the cause of it said, "Fret thyself no longer, but take a stone and put it in the same place, and think that is your lump of gold, for as you never meant to use it, the one will do you as much good as the other." The worth of money is not in its possession, but in its use. Fables, Aesop's 6th century BC. Now I'm going to go over quickly the four categories of the more self-destructive mentality side to money. The greedy fish. The greedy fish takes the human side out of money. Cold and ruthless, they see only the lifeless balance sheet, viewing others solely as either pawns or obstructions in their pursuit of wealth. They trample on people's sentiments and alienate valuable allies. Greedy fish are the con artist's bread and butter. Lured by the bait of easy money, they swallow the ruse, hook, line, and sinker. Either avoid them before they exploit you, or play on their greed to your gain. Powerful people judge everything by what it costs. not just in money, but in time, dignity, and peace of mind. And this is exactly what bargain demons cannot do. Wasting valuable time digging for bargains, they worry endlessly about what they could have gotten elsewhere for a little less. These are the people I was referring to at the beginning, the people who are scraping the bottom of the barrel, who are wanting to pay the less and but complain the most. I'm not gonna lie, I've probably done this many, many times in the past. It's how I was raised in some ways, to try and take advantage of everything and to understand that maybe the other way, that not everything that it's expensive is worthy and is of high quality. So that's kind of what I was taught growing up, but now I'm seeing the value in the other perspective. I know I've wasted a lot of time trying to find deals and bargains when trying to save maybe a negligible amount of money. Here's the thing, you may be using all this time and energy to save, at the end of the day, $5, $10, $15, $20, $50, and you may spend an hour, 2 hours, half an hour, a whole day trying to figure this out. Is your hour really worth $10? Is your day really worth cutting coupons out to save a dollar every time you go buy some food? Is that really worth your time? No, it's not. Our time's worth a lot more than that. Don't sell yourself short. Because the cost of these pursuits are not always in money. The price of this bargain we pay is often deceptive. We pay in time and peace of mind instead. These types might seem to harm only themselves, but their attitudes are contagious. Their attitudes are contagious because I grew up with that attitude, and I became it in a lot of ways. Unless you resist them, they will infect you with their insecure feelings that you should have looked harder to find a cheaper price. Don't argue with them or try and change them. This is what I learned the hard way personally. Just mentally add up the cost in time and inner peace, if not hidden in financial expense, of the irrational pursuit of a bargain. The sadist. Financial sadists play vicious power games with money as a way of asserting their power. They might, for example, make you wait for money that is owed to you. Sadists seem to think that paying for something gives them the right to torture and abuse the seller. They have no sense of their courtier element in money. If you are unlucky enough to get involved with this type, accepting a financial loss may be better in the long run than getting entangled in their destructive power games. Lastly, the indiscriminate giver. Indiscriminate givers are generous because they want to be loved and admired by all. And the generosity is so indiscriminate and needy that it may not have the desired effect. If they give to one and all, why should the recipient feel special? In any involvement with this type, you will often feel burdened by their insatiable emotional needs. Be wary. There are many transgressions and many observances of this law. It is pretty long. I cannot go through all of them. You should seriously buy this book. There are many really great stories here. Transgression of the Law 1. In around the 1500s, a story spread of an Indian chief to the east of Peru who once each year would ritually cover himself in gold dust and dive into a lake. He became known as El Dorado, or the Golden Man. And as a result, rumors spread of an empire called El Dorado, wealthier than the whole Incan nation. People fantasized and dreamed that the streets were paved and the buildings inlaid with gold. This elaborate story didn't seem implausible, for a chief who could afford to waste gold in Dust Lake must rule a golden empire. Soon the Spanish were searching for El Dorado all over South America. In 1541, the largest expedition left Ecuador. Hundreds of Spaniards, thousands of Indians carrying supplies, many scouts, thousands of swines, llamas, and close to 1,000 dogs. But this expedition was soon hit by torrential rain, which had rotted its gear, spoiled its food. The leader of this expedition's name was Gonzalo, and he believed the Indians were withholding information with him about El Dorado. And word spread of his murderous tendencies and his tyrannous nature, so they made up stories to him so they could get as far away from him as possible. They told him everything and anything he wanted to hear. So Gonzalo followed the leads that the Indians gave him, but they were only led farther and deeper into the jungle. The explorers' spirits sagged, their uniforms had shredded away, their armor rusted, their shoes were no more, forcing them to walk barefoot. The Indian slaves they had set out with had either died or deserted them. They lived on roots and fruit. They traveled for a very long time without end, but they realized that they had only wanted to return back to their home city. Over 100 men from the expedition, originally numbering in the thousands, managed to find their way back. They had seemed to emerge from hell itself, wrapped in tatters and skins, their bodies covered in sores and so emaciated as to be unrecognizable. For over a year and a half, they had marched in an enormous circle, 2,000 miles by foot. The vast sums of money invested in the expedition had yielded nothing. No sign of El Dorado and no sign of gold. Interpretation. The Spanish didn't stop after that. They ended up launching expedition after expedition in search of El Dorado. It ended up costing millions of lives and actually helped bring the Spanish Empire to ruin. Gold became Spanish's obsession. If you are still with me, then thank you. Here is the following lesson that you obviously value time as much as your knowledge of understanding. Power requires self-discipline. The prospect of wealth, particularly easy, sudden wealth, plays havoc with emotions. The suddenly rich believe that more is always possible. The free lunch, the money that will fall into your lap, is just around the corner. In this delusion, the greedy neglect everything. Power really depends on self-control, the goodwill of others, and so on. Understand, with one exception, death, no lasting change in fortune comes quickly. Sudden wealth rarely lasts, for it is built on nothing solid. Never let lust for money lure you out of the protective and enduring fortress of real power. Make power your goal, and money will find its way to you. Leave El Dorado for the suckers and fools. And every single day, people are trying to find their El Dorado. This is what gambling is based on. This is what the lottery is based on. We have thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around the world every single day buying tickets to win lottery, going to casinos, spending hours there, not just for fun, because I respect that, you know, it can be fun. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about minor addictions and full-on addictions of trying to win money and find their El Dorado and their gold and their riches from this illusion that our society and these corporations have created. You may want to win all this money. A lot of people want it. Of course they do. It'd be nice. You could buy this, you could do this. But you didn't earn it. You really didn't earn it. You lucked at it. The money you will have received, or you have won, will have been built on nothing solid. It will not have been built on a foundation of hard work, of sweat, of blood, of just straight work, of creativity, of doing something different than the rest of the people. That's what I want. I want to earn my money. As much as I believe the intelligence I have and the self-awareness I have of understanding what I would be able to do with winning $1 million, I think I could use that money pretty wisely compared to someone maybe who hasn't read this type of book or isn't knowledgeable in this type of way. I think I could use it pretty wisely. I think it could definitely propel the trajectory of my life in a positive way. But at the same time, man, fuck that. I want to earn it. Man, like, your story, your legacy is all the more greater if people know you earned what you got instead of just being given it. People don't look up to those who are just given everything. I don't. I don't look up to people who are given everything in life and who have inherited wealth and stature and fame. I don't think much of those people. I think, cool, good job. You were born. Now what? I'd be kind of pissed if that was me, really, because I'd be pissed. I'd be pissed because now I got to do something different. Now I got to set myself apart because I got people looking at me like this. And now I got to change that. And so, man, it's just one man's opinion. It's just one man's perspective. I ain't got all the answers. I just got my answers, my truth. And I know I want to earn that because when I'm dead, I'll hopefully be able to inspire and empower others to earn it themselves. And maybe my grandson or grandchild has listened to this one day, and maybe they'll feel the same.